Hi, this is Ken Tangent. This is episode 22 of What's It Like? My guest today is Jody Franklin. Jody, how are you?
Doing all right, Ken. Yourself?
I'm okay. So you're with Cox Communications, president of the company, right?
A little farther down the chain than that, but yeah.
What? I thought that's why I called you. I want to talk about... So what do you actually do?
Technical support, tier one, basically. My TV doesn't work. My phone's not working. Frontline support.
Oh. How many calls a day do you actually get then?
Depending on the day, you're somewhere between 30 and 50.
Are they really technical, or are they as simple as, you know, you didn't plug in your set?
I'd say a good half of them or better are you didn't plug it in, you didn't turn it on. No, you really didn't plug it in, you really didn't turn it on. And then after that 50%, it varies from I can't remember my password to I changed the input on the TV and didn't realize it. Every now and then they actually get complicated, but most of the time it's simple stuff that people just don't think about.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to kind of work your way through the thought process of what could possibly be wrong and what am I doing that I could be doing some other way.
Right.
How did you get into this biz?
Well, actually, my first tech support job was back in 97. I worked for a local dial-up ISP called LiveNet. The sysadmin of the company was an old friend of mine, and I had literally that day had just left my job at a market research company and stopped by to see him at work. And he's like, so you're not working anymore? I'm like, no, I'm not. Well, then, what would you like to do? So ended up with him for a while, left that, did my own in-house computer support for a while. And around 2003, 2004, the market started drying up because of companies like Geek Squad and all, mm-hmm. Decided I needed a steady paycheck.
How did you get into technology? Something you did as a kid?
Yeah. I don't really know. I guess I don't know how it started so much. It just kind of did. I know when other kids were playing with chemistry sets, I was playing with electronics kits. I just had a habit of taking things apart and putting them back together. Most of the time, they still worked.
So what was the first thing you took apart?
Can opener, I think it was.
Oh.
Yeah, I actually figured out what was wrong with it. I couldn't fix it, but I did figure out what was wrong with it. I think it was like 6 or 7.
Let's see, can opener. Basic motor goes round and round. Something gets stuck in the middle?
Well, the latch mechanism, when you hold the can down, it's supposed to auto-lock.
Ah.
Was one of those that would stay and keep running once you put it down. And the latch was broken, so it didn't lock. So turned out if you held it down hard enough, it would open a can, but you had to pretty much jam your hand on it to make it work, so it wasn't worth it.
So how did your parents impact your view of yourself and technology and where you've come?
Well, my father's probably, as far as tech is concerned, he was probably my main influence. My mother's scared to dust things with buttons because she doesn't want to do something to mess it up. my father went to school as a draftsman, and then he ended up being drafted during the Vietnam War and was a deck captain on the Nimitz. So he was dealing with tech a lot. So it just kind of stuck with him afterwards. We did model railroading when I was young. Got our first computer when I was 7. And so it kind of went that way.
So did you use your computer when you did the railroad?
We never really got into that. That was kind of the direction we were heading in. Mm-hmm. And hobby interests changed before we got that far.
I see. Moved on to something else. Huh?
Yeah. That, I guess, so I got my grandparents, my grandfather, both sides actually influenced it as well too. My father's father worked for the local shipyard as a shop foreman, the electronics shop at the local shipyard. And my mother's father was actually a journeyman electrician.
Oh, wow. So lots of hands-on kind of background.
Yeah.
And were they, how far in school did they go?
My grandfather, father's side, I don't think he actually finished elementary school. My mother's side, I believe he went through junior high but never finished high school. Of course, at that time, it was, if you had a trade, it didn't matter.
And in your life?
Well, I did... through high school, and I did some college at a tech college, a local East Coast thing called ECPI for network programming. Didn't actually finish there, and just never really had occasion to go back because that's around the time when degrees didn't mean much anymore. Without the certifications with them, degree didn't mean a whole lot.
Did you go for certifications?
Never did. People ask about it every now and then, but to be honest with you, I guess I'm still at that stage where I don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, okay, I spend the money, spend the time, get the cert, and then I don't use it. So until I have some idea what I want to do, there's really not much point in, you know, hurting pieces of paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, even certifications are not as valued as they were a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're doing Microsoft Shop, you know, people don't really care about them anymore. And even then, it's just enough to get you in the door.
What was your major challenge in school?
Well, my minor dyslexia, so that really is my biggest issue. Until I made it to high school, no one really recognized it for what it was.
Mm.
And then when my first year of high school, I did actually did double electives my first year of high school. I had basic electronics as well as a general communications class. And the communications teacher was dyslexic, and he recognized it like the third day in class. Started setting things up with my other teachers to facilitate that.
That must have impacted your life a lot.
Yeah, it made school less frustrating at that point because language, and as far as any technical standpoint, was something I always had trouble with. And getting past that just made everything else more difficult. So yeah, once that got sorted out and they realized what the problem was, then, you know, accommodations were made so that that wasn't as much of a hurdle.
Did your dad have similar problems?
No, but my mother did.
Hmm.
Which is kind of weird. Usually that follows the male side, but
yeah. Well, genes do mix.
Yeah.
So if you hadn't gone into technology, what would you have done?
I'm not really sure. I mean, every hobby, every interest I've ever had is in some way fallen back to it. Photography a bit, but, you know, that gets pretty technical pretty quick. Even, you know, basic, you know, point and shoot film camera, you know, once you start developing, you get into the tech. About the closest thing I have any interest in that's, you know, not necessarily rooted in technology is I do some creative writing, poetry, stuff like that. But I was never any good at writing on paper, so I'm either got a typewriter or a word processor, so we're, you know, even in a loose sense, still back to the technology. I guess, you know, when I was little, I had probably about the second or third most common what I want to do when I grow up was a train engineer, you know, because I was 7 and 8 years old, and, you know, they were trains, and I was using model railroads, so that was a big deal. And then I realized what was involved in it, not that I wasn't interested, but it's like, okay, I don't think I want to do that for the rest of my life. And I figured out pretty early on that was the kind of career where that's what you started doing and that's what you retired doing.
Yes.
So I was like, yeah, maybe not so much.
Yeah. That's sort of like an elevator operator going sideways.
Yeah. It's like, you know.
Well, now that you've survived childhood, what constitutes family for you?
Well, guess what it always did? I've never viewed the word family to mean the people you were born to.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say they can't be, but my relatives are the people that I have genetic ties to. My family are the people that I choose or that choose me. You know, the people that support you, that care about you, that look after you, whether they feel you deserve it or not, just because they care.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't always the people that you're born to.
Yeah.
My family is literally spread across the globe. Some of these people that I've known for 20 some years, never met them face to face.
So brought together by technology.
Yeah. Back to the old BBS days and FidoNet message networks. I still occasionally keep in touch with people that I met that way. Like a couple of them live in Australia, one in Germany that we don't talk often anymore, but we still, you know, keep up with each other enough to know what's going on in each other's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across these people when I was like 13 years old. And I'm a few years away from 40 now.
So when you are, so you do customer satisfaction, basically, in terms of working with the technical side of the issues when they have cable problems.
Yeah.
Does that include modem issues and the online stuff or just the television?
Television, internet, telephone. Telephone's less involved for the level I'm at because it's kind of a, you know, we the company I work for, we've transitioned from circuit switch to packet switch technology. So it's all voice over IP on dedicated boxes. So it's a lot of similar to internet. You know, is it plugged in? Is it turned on? Are your phones still plugged into the jacks? You know, do you have a phone off the hook kind of thing? But internet and video gets more involved because we have, at least especially with internet, we do have to a limited degree, go through computer settings and make sure that they are actually hooked up to what they think they're hooked up to.
Do most people nowadays have routers too?
It's very uncommon actually to encounter a customer that doesn't have a router.
Hmm.
A lot of times you'll even find them on people with a single computer that's hardwired to the router. They still have it because they either think they need it or they consider the NAT to be a security.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have it that way. Of course, the funny thing is, of most of those, they never secured their wireless, so they're actually less secure. But but they don't realize that.
They don't bother to put in a password or to make it secure at all?
A lot of times, they plug it in, turn it on, it works, so they never run the setup CD. And
yes. So do you have a preference between WEP and WAP or WAPA or...
I never tried to pronounce WPA, but preference-wise, WPA Enterprise, well, WPA 2 Enterprise, but, you know, you've got to have a radius server for that. I don't expect people in their houses to have it.
No, but it's pretty extensive.
Yeah. But, I mean, as far as our customer side, I mean, as long as you bother to set up at least WPA, and I look at wireless security the way I look at a lock on a front door. If you want in, you're getting in.
Yes, but it keeps the nosy people out.
It keeps the nosy people out, and it makes the people that are looking for target of opportunity just to go next door. That's all it's good for. And that I tell, when the customers ask, that's what I tell them. It's like, you know, it's not going to keep the guy out that wants to get to you. It's going to keep the guy out that wants to get to somebody.
There you go. What's the best thing about your job?
Depending on the day of quitting time. Spent the first 3 years with the company. I've been with them a little over 7 years. I spent the first 3 years with the company as a field technician. And the best part of it when I was doing that was walking out of a customer's house with things working that weren't working when I went in. And when I got into this side and taking the phone calls, it was the same thing. I ended the call with either it worked or I had determined what the problem was and arranged the appropriate technician to go out and fix it. And I still have those moments, but you know, I've been doing it for quite a few years now, and a lot of times the frustration overtakes the satisfaction. But there's still those calls where you get somebody on the line that generally actually needs help. They're not being lazy. They're not in the, I don't want to do anything, just make it work. They actually have a problem. They understand they have a problem. They just don't know how to fix it. And you end the call, and it's working.
Where do you see technology going?
Well, I guess that depends on who ends up shaping it more, the people developing it or the people using it. Of course, those are lines that are getting blurred more and more all the time. I guess a lot of it really depends on whether people continue to embrace it the way they have. I mean, we're looking at, 10 years ago, your cell phone was meant for making phone calls. Mm-hmm. Some people had texting plans, most didn't. And it was so expensive to use, most people didn't use them. Now, I'm doing this interview with you on my phone.
Mm.
So I'm sitting upstairs at a building in downtown Norfolk, a local hackerspace here, over my cell phone connection, doing the interview with you. And I mean, I know I'm an early adopter. I get it. I understand it.
Yes.
But this is the sort of thing that just the average person on the street is starting to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't scare them anymore. So if that continues to go that way, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 5 years, maybe even less, the commonplace now of the cell phone becomes the commonplace level of, you know, a tablet, like an iPad or something similar, where people carry those around. People that even a few years ago may not even have owned a computer because they don't see it as a computer. It's an appliance to use.
A tool for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, cars now, most cars that are being sold now have more sophisticated computers in them than the first computer I owned.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Which, to really date that, was a Timex Sinclair 1000. Had 8K of RAM.
Wow. But it was small.
It was very small.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you've got cars out there that have more processing power in just the computer that's supposed to run in the cabin that, you know, shows the displays and that the driver uses.
That's true.
Than that did. I mean, I know the engine tech, you know, has had it for a long time, but it's only now that the inside the cabin is where this tech is showing up, and people expect it now. It's not a luxury anymore.
Well, you get used to having a supercomputer on your table, and now you're getting the luxury of actually carrying them around in your hands.
Right.
Are your customers, do they seem to be asking for faster upload as well as download, or are they more interested in just one direction?
It depends on the customer. I mean, there's always going to be, there's always has been the, you know, I want faster upload people, you know, even if they don't need it, they want it. But it is becoming more commonplace that people comment on the upload speeds. The area I live in, we're just started, about 5 months ago, rolling out DOCSIS 3. And our highest tier of service involving using DOCSIS 3 is a 50 megabit download, but it's still only a 5 megabit upload.
Hmm.
Which, I mean, you know, we're not even scraping the surface of, you know, one channel of upload on that. But still, that's what we're using. And the customers that are asking for that level of download are upset because the upload is that small.
What do they want to upload?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be people that, you know, that want to run services even though they're not supposed to, because, you know, it's because it's a residential account. But then, I mean, we've got like the Logitech makes a Google TV add-on device.
Mm-hmm.
They came out with that about 5 or 6 months ago. Well, that has a video camera that'll attach to it now, so it does video conferencing.
I see.
And I think was it Panasonic or Samsung had their newest TV that runs the Google TV software.
Mm-hmm.
There's a camera that will attach directly to the TV and turns it into a high-definition video conferencing device. You're looking at needing almost a megabit of bandwidth upload just to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one TV. You throw somebody else, you know, running a game server off, even if it's on a game console, PS3 or an Xbox, hosting of 7 or 8 other people, and then you get just this normal return communications from, you know, somebody video streaming in the next room, and you've eaten up 3 or 4 megabits right there.
Yeah. I guess if you're thinking of upload as being, maybe it's the wrong term for it, because if you think of it in terms of processes of things I want to just get out, I want to send video conferencing, I want to connect more with people and to tell them more. So maybe that really is going to become a stronger part of the business model for you guys.
Yeah. And I'm sure it will, if nothing else, just because of competition.
Mm-hmm.
In not all of this area, but in a lot of the area that I'm in, Verizon has lit up fiber to the house.
Oh.
And while it's a higher end package, they do offer symmetric 25 megabits.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive, but I do know a couple people have it. And, you know, I mean, you've got 25 up, 25 down on a light pipe that's, you know, even in a heavily saturated network area, you know, you're pretty good idea that at least in their network, you're going to get a good 20 at any given time. It opens up the idea of doing things that you hadn't thought about before. When you've got 20, 25 megabits upload at your disposal, things that you never would have considered doing, all of a sudden, hey, why can't I stream my personal music collection to the 3 cell phones that my family has now at any time I want to? Because, you know, I've got the bandwidth to do it. Before, it wasn't a possibility. I could get 1, maybe 2. Now I can do, you know, 5, 6. I can stream video to my tablet while I'm riding on the bus, and it's in my personal music, my personal collection at home.
Is that something the cable companies can compete with?
Well, like I said, with DOCSIS 3, the bandwidth-wise, sure we can.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of actually deploying it. Our company deployed in the Northern Virginia market, up like Annandale, Fredericksburg, such as that, already, and it's working stable there very well. We're still getting the bugs out here, which is why we haven't turned anything up faster than we have. But if we open up all potential channels, I mean, we could get 120 megabits download easy, probably do 20 or more upload easy. Cox is probably the when it compared to all the cable companies, we take this, okay, we're going to wait and see what happens approach, where then there's other companies like Charter and Time Warner that kind of sit in the middle, and then there's Comcast that jumps on everything. We like to watch and see what Comcast does, take what they do and go, okay, we're not going to do that. Then we watch what the others do and use that to base our decisions on.
Well, you're not nearly as big.
Yeah, I mean, comparatively, we're not. We have good coverage in almost every state. We have at least some area, but customer-wise, we aren't as big. So we really can't afford the, like, Comcast loves to just do whatever they want, but they've got the customer base where they can afford a large level of attrition
right. And
still function. We can't. So we can't take the risks. But at the same time, we do get the reward of when we do it, we learn from everyone else's mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Is your headquarters still in Arizona?
No, actually, headquarters is in Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta. Oh.
Yeah, which is funny because we don't actually service Atlanta.
You can't?
We don't because we have a newspaper and a radio station there.
Oh.
So we can't do television service there. The FCC won't allow it because we have too much media in the one spot.
Well, more Jody Franklin, right after I remind you of the good work being done by St. Jude's. I've got pictures of my kids when they were little, making goofy eyes and showing big smiles. Cracks me up every time. They had so much fun just doing nothing. And I loved making them laugh. Pictures help remind us of those irreplaceable moments. If you love pictures of kids, I got an idea for you. Go to stjudes.org, stjude.org, and look at the bottom right-hand side of the homepage. This is the site for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and the picture is their patient of the month. Every month you'll see a great picture. They always remind me of my kids and of my little brother. When I was 10, Jimmy was born, and he was very sick. Massive brain damage and a blood disorder like leukemia. Many hours and lots of prayer went into his care. Terrible pain. But the moments I remember are the happy moments and his big smiles. There was no St. Jude's at the time, but there is now. When you go to the site and you're looking at the pictures of the kids, it's their happy moments that you'll remember. It's a positive experience. As long as you're there, click on the donate button. Costs over $1 million a day to operate St. Jude's. Don't worry, I'm not asking you to give the whole amount. I'm just asking you to chip in. So go to stjude.org. I also added St. Jude's to my Facebook page. After all, how could anyone not like St. Jude's? So Jody, everybody needs self-motivation. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
I guess a lot of it really depends on the what I'm needing. I mean, it's why am I not? I guess this is the thing, and I have to judge it based, case by case. Of course, that's how I do with everything, so it doesn't surprise me. I do it with that too. Life is gray. I don't black and white anything, so I have to treat everything on a case by case basis. A lot of times, I have to get to a point where I'm staring failure in the face. And oftentimes that's what it is. It does it. It's like, okay, people can give me ideas, incentives. So I can give them to myself. It doesn't matter. Until I'm looking at it's this or nothing, that's usually what gets me going. I'd love to have something else that would get me started sooner, but most of the time it just isn't there because I can rationalize myself through everything else. Sometimes I'm too smart for my own good. So, yeah, it's usually looking at failure that motivates me, which I don't know if that says about me, but it works.
So deadlines are important to you.
They are, even if they're artificial. I can't impose them on myself because I know that they're fake. But if somebody else puts one on me that I don't know isn't legitimate, it'll do something for me. I never studied for anything in school. The night before a test, I would skim over because if I tried to do it in progress up until the day, I would ignore it. Most writing assignments, even after I dealt with the whole, language thing, I would usually wait till the night of. If I didn't do it before then, I would mill through it. I wouldn't pay attention to it. It was worse. The quality of the work was worse if I worked on it progressively rather than if I did it all at one time.
Because you had it all in your head? Or your attention varied?
I'll say yes, because probably a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
I never, like, I've never been tested for, anyone ever really suspected any sort of attention deficit disorders, but it runs in the family. So I probably have something, just not severe enough for it to be noticed. But yeah, I would say that's probably at least a fair part of it, that because I would tend to wander off in my own mind.
Yeah.
That if I didn't have that, you know, I only have 3 hours left for this to work, I'd never do it.
The downside of that is that it's difficult to challenge yourself to the extreme, isn't it?
True. True, it is. And that usually has to come from an outside source.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, somebody else hands me something and for whatever reason I've taken it on, I did. And when I get in the middle of it, I realize it's a bigger thing than I thought it was. I probably wouldn't have agreed to it. And yeah, because it has to come from the outside. Usually when I try to challenge myself in that way, it just doesn't work. I've got projects that I've various types I've started, some of them 10 years ago or more, and there's bits of them laying around. And I tell myself one day I'll finish them, but I know I never will. Unless something else outside makes me do it.
Yes.
Something comes up that goes, okay, if that project were finished, I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
That would do it. But just the to do it for me. Yeah, because I'll sit and think about it all day, but actually follow through with it, no.
When you need to calm yourself, how do you soothe yourself?
Under ideal circumstances, usually open field, sit in it. It's one of the few times, I guess, that I openly address my religion. I'm pagan of a no determinate path. So nature, really, is it comes.
Mm-hmm.
Preferably in the evening or overnight, you know, late night, dark would be the ideal. Failing that, music of whatever fits my mood. Growing up, I was exposed to a little bit of everything. And at this point, if somebody asks me what my favorite music is, I'd be like, okay, it's easier for you to tell you what things I don't like. Because there's literally no genre of music that I can't find something to enjoy in.
Mm-hmm.
And that even goes to really, really, you know, how to word it, but some of the most Christian gospel music that's, you know, just over the top, I can still find stuff that I enjoy. There's death metal I enjoy. Most of the classical composers I enjoy. I love jazz of pretty much every variety. A lot of drum and bass stuff, or as well as in its roots, the more like Aboriginal beat style music. I like yodeling. I can't do it, but I love to listen to it.
Well,
probably one of my favorite instruments to listen to is a ukulele. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I just like the sound of it. So yeah, music of some sort, just whatever fits my mood.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
I can't say there's any one event. I guess it's probably been aspects of various events. Probably the hardest thing for me to actually overcome and do in a physical aspect was when I was a field technician for with Cox. Not only the physical work involved, you know, lugging around an 85-pound ladder, pulling really heavy cable, you know, across lines and all. I'm 6'3", and at the time I barely made 170. I'm not much heavier there now, so I'm not the strongest person in the world. So physically, that was a big challenge. You know, climbing up a ladder, 28 some feet in the air. Never afraid of heights, always afraid of the sudden impact from falling. So that was an issue there too. I guess a lot of things I had to push myself through was involved in that job, really. But I guess the biggest challenge always has been, and even to this day continues to be, me asserting myself in a social situation. That's a reoccurring everyday challenge.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college,
I probably would.
What would it be?
But because the whole social situation thing. And
well, this is your opportunity to give a virtual one. What would be your best advice?
Well, I'd probably have to go through notes of things I'd written, because it probably all comes down over things that I've come up with in the middle of the night. But off the top of my head, or as close to as I can, are things that I've used as personal quotes on various social networks. don't love someone like in anything. Just love them. Labeling love destroys it. You don't love someone like a friend or a brother or whatever. Love them. Don't spend your entire life worried about making someone else proud of you, because you will never live up to other people's expectations of yourself. You may never live up to your own, but your own are the only ones that's going to matter to you in the end. If you're happy with how you ended up, it doesn't matter what anyone else thought of you. And in general, don't worry about what other people think about you, because most people will not tell you to your face what they think about you behind your back. So it's just not worth it.
The last question is to help me get better at this. Think of a moment we haven't talked about. What question should I have asked you that I didn't, in order to get you to tell that story?
Well, let's see. What should you have asked me that you didn't? I guess a lot of that depends about what you're trying to find out.
I'm trying to get people to tell their stories.
Just to tell their story.
Yeah, that's my job.
Well, for me, I guess probably the question that would get the most information, not necessarily information you may or not want to know, but would have gotten the most information about me, and partly religion. I'm not really a religious person, spiritual, but just relationships, how I deal with them. And you touched on it, it's the family question. But for me, I guess it does go a lot deeper than that, the way I deal with people. And I think the way I deal with people, the way I expect to have to deal with people, probably colors everything I do. Like I said, with loving people, not as anything, but just loving them. My friends are what are my family. The people I call friend, and I use that word very sparingly. There's probably no more than 20 people that I would call a friend. Friends for me are the people I love. And like I said, I don't label that word in any, I don't color that word with any kind of labeling. If I love you, you could be a parent or a sibling. You could be a boyfriend or a girlfriend. You could be, you know, any kind of standard social interaction. But I don't treat that any differently than I do in anyone else. If I love you, I love you. And to that end, in romantic aspects, I don't put any kind of boundary on that. I don't see any reason to. You, the person, the thing about them you love doesn't find itself bound to a race or a religion or a gender. It's, you know, you care about someone, so you care about them. You want good for them because you do. How they were born, the circumstances of their birth is irrelevant. It may have colored who they are. It may have helped form the person that you care about, but it doesn't matter how they got to be who they are. What matters at that point when you know them is who they are. Finding out how they got that way helps you get to know them better, but knowing them doesn't, it isn't a matter of how they got there.
How do you decide who to love?
If it were only that simple. I don't think you decide who you love. I mean, it's as much a familiarity as it is a biochemical response, as it is an emotional comfort. I mean, there's so many aspects into what makes you care or not care about a particular individual more than another. It isn't something to decide. And me, as I've already alluded to, I don't have a gender preference. So the normal limiting factors that people, you know, would put up for themselves to decide who they are and aren't going to be involved with, regardless of the nature of the relationship, I don't have.
Do you consider yourself straight and gay?
Well, I guess the bi is the normal term, though there's a more inclusive term that's come up, pansexual, just basically gender is irrelevant.
As opposed to all the above.
Right. You know, it's like you don't like men, you don't like women, you just like people. I think it's more fitting, but it's such a weird term because it's not really well defined, so I don't tend to use it. But what it's supposed to mean, I think it probably is the most fitting. But as say, I guess I guess the to better way to word the question, not so much of a how you decide who to love, but maybe a what tends to make you love someone, or why, how do you find yourself in that emotion? And for me, a lot of it's familiarity, and not just because I know someone, but find them familiar on an emotional level.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of connection.
A connection, yeah. Something that, because I mean, there are people that I've known for weeks, and I find myself in love with them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that I've known my whole life, and I don't use the term friend for them. I care about them, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots I would do for them, possibly even give my own life for them if I needed to. But I don't consider them a friend, because that connection just isn't there.
Right.
There's going to be your common, you know, common birth factors. You know, did you grow up in the same kind of circumstances that helps you relate to someone? Did you grow up in the same socioeconomics? Did you grow up maybe the same race or in the same geographical area that gives you a commonality? For me, though, most of the time, what I find most binding is a similar mindset in dealing with people.
Mm-hmm.
I gravitate towards people that treat people in the same way I do.
Mm.
My girlfriend is bi. Most of the people that I've been involved with romantically have been.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as people don't want to talk about the idea that sexuality colors who you are, because you don't, especially with the constantly reoccurring homosexuality being an issue, for whatever reason, legal or otherwise, you know, people try to separate that out of the person. And it's you can't. Because how you define romantic partners or potential romantic partners, whether you want to admit it or not, helps define who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a matter of who would you spend your time with.
Right. So you have less boundaries in that regard.
Yes, but at the same time, more complications.
Mm-hmm.
People like to make the joke of, you're free to date anybody. It's like, yes, and I'm free to be rejected by everybody.
Well, actually, if you are dating people who have the same point of view, it's a relatively small group in that sense.
It can be. I think more people fall outside of the hetero or homosexual than they want to admit.
Hmm.
Sexuality is fluid.
Mm-hmm.
You like what you like. You are attracted to physically what you're attracted to. And that can change from day to day.
Mm-hmm.
For no matter what your orientation is, it's going to change. I mean, there are days where, a straight guy is going to look at a woman and be, meh. 3 weeks later, he could look at the exact same woman and that could get him going. She could be dressed the exact same way, carrying herself the same way. He's in a different mindset. I don't think it's any different with anyone else. It's just that some people, for whatever reason, whether it's biochemical, it's the nature of how they were brought up or whatever it is, and I don't claim to know, that some people have more limitations on what they will find attractive or can find attractive.
Well, in computer terms, it's like the questions of whether it's hardware or software.
Yeah. Or is it did you learn it or were you born that
mm-hmm.
way? Yeah. And in the end, does it matter?
That's right. Thank you, Jody, for being with me today. I appreciate the chance to talk to you and get your views. I really appreciate your taking the time.
Not a problem, sir. Glad to do it.